If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers!
The Cleveland Browns were trying to be the perfect hosts. They put out their finest linens, polished the silverware, sat the Steelers down to a scrumptious banquet where they could feast to their heart's content. The Steelers, however, gracious guests that they were, would have none of it. On a rain-soaked afternoon, in the only stadium outside of Pittsburgh where Ben Roethlisberger is the number one winning quarterback, the Steelers graciously handed the Browns their first non-loss in 624 days, achieving a 21-21 tie. I'd like to say that the Browns took advantage of six Steeler turnovers, but they did not. They took advantage of just one turnover, but managed to overcome a 14-point deficit in fourth quarter. Welcome to your Steelers Outpost podcast, September 10th, 2018, Episode 55. This is Tom from the Washington, D.C. Outpost. Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost.
I have chills running down every fiber of my body from that introduction, as depressing as it was. Real football is here, ladies and gentlemen, and boy, is it ugly! That was unenjoyable from start to finish yesterday, but it's here, and we're going to break it down. And, you know, if you guys are anything like me, you probably experienced legitimate medical problems, and you questioned your priorities as a human being yesterday, as your heart palpitations didn't settle down till normal until maybe 30 minutes ago. And now that we're talking about it again, I feel my heart ready to burst out of its cage because that was so frustrating. But we broke down the game today. We looked at it again, and I got to say, when you don't have the pressure of wondering whether the Steelers are going to win or lose, you're able to look at it in a little bit of a different light. And I got to say, the game was bad, and the people who you thought played poorly, they did. But this really was a game that the Steelers were in control of most of the time, and I feel like it should have just ended up as a sloppy Steelers win. And for most of the game, that's what it looked like it was going to be, and then the wheels came off in the fourth quarter, particularly with a pair of turnovers with within 56 seconds of each other. And there's obviously a big bright spot seeing how James Conner filled in for the villainous Le'Veon Bell. But James Conner taketh and James Conner giveth away. We'll get more into that once we get into it.
All right, Nick, why don't you do your breathing? Bring your heartbeat back down under 60 beats per minute. I have a very special announcement. The Steelers Outpost podcast is thrilled to announce that we have joined the Armchair All-Americans. This is a podcast network dedicated to giving local coverage, hyper-localized coverage. We want to get personal stories, people who know the stories. If anybody's paying attention, you can tell that the national personalities have no idea about what's going on. They read headlines and they don't know the subtleties of the Le'Veon story, for instance. So the Armchair All-Americans started out with a couple of guys out of the University of Georgia covering all the SEC football teams. And now they're moving to the NFL, and we, the Steelers Outpost Podcast, are the exclusive podcast providers for the Pittsburgh Steelers football team.
So it's pretty exciting, guys. There's a lot of opportunities that are going to come about with this partnership with Armchair All-Americans, and you guys are going to get to reap the benefits. We're going to be collaborating with our colleagues who are covering some of the other teams. I think that there's about 10 to 12 football teams in the NFL that currently have podcasts. Obviously, the best one is now accounted for with the Pittsburgh Steelers and your humble hosts trying to do justice to the greatest football team to ever football. But hopefully, you know, they're going to be getting all the teams in the league are going to have a podcast. And with anybody who has one currently, if the Steelers are playing them, we're going to get hopefully some collaborations with I don't know if the Chiefs have one or not, or particularly I know the Ravens are working on one, but we'll be able to bring like hosts from other podcasts so we can really better understand the matchups and the subtleties and intricacies of the other teams so that we can better analyze what's going on with the Steelers.
So apropos of what you were saying before the announcement, Nick, you know, I don't know what to do with a tie. I know what to do with a win. I know what to do with a loss. I just don't know what to do with a tie.
Oh, it's
a
loss.
What Cam Hayward said. I know what Cam Hayward said. It was a loss, but when T.J. Watt blocked that final field goal, there was a certain fluttering of the heart, a certain joy that emerged from that play.
Well, I did not see that play because after the last fumble of the game, I drove away from the house that I was watching it at. But there is a slight flutter. I think that was due to the fact that at least we don't have to admit that the Browns beat us. And to me, that's the only victory. But otherwise, I mean, a tie is a loss. I mean, a tie to the Browns is like two losses. Might as well be. But in terms of the standings, I mean, we're 0.5 games behind Baltimore and Cincinnati now. So you've kind of dug yourself into a hole, you know, unless they tie somewhere along the line, which isn't going to happen. Then maybe you get into something weird there. But it was a loss. No ways around it. So we're going to take it through the game a little bit here. We're going to start a little bit high level. I'm sure a lot of you saw it. I know some of you didn't get the chance to see it. So we will try and give things in a slightly chronological order. But like I said before, I mean, the Steelers had this game in control. We're up 21-7 in the fourth quarter, right? And so here's the first thing I think about this game. Number one, Tomlin and Ben. Their record on the road for 1 p.m. kickoff games is now 21-18-1. So can we honestly say that any of us are surprised on this outcome? I mean, they do it every year. Like I said, when I rewatched this game, it should have been a replay of last year. You remember that the season opened up against Cleveland last year. Le'Veon was extremely underwhelming. It took just an Antonio Brown miracle catch to get us out of that game last year. And it was ugly, but we got the win. That's what I felt like it should have been this time around. Because there were turnovers galore, but a lot of them kind of happened at the end of the game. And when you rewatch it, it's like, how did they drop 21-7 at the end of the game?
So this isn't an excuse. This is a fact. This is a first game. The Steelers seem to show a lot of rust, as every team does. But that rain also had a major effect on passing and catching, and including the key fumble of the game from James Conner.
Totally. It did. And you don't make an excuse in terms of like, that's the only reason why we lost. But it's like we were tweeting out before this game. Rain is sort of the compressor of football, if you will. It kind of brings the bad teams and the good teams in towards the middle and adds this slop element and this luck element where you can get the ball to roll a certain way. So I guess what we're trying to say there is like, listen, I don't think the sky is falling here. And were they bad? Yeah. Was Ben bad? He was definitely bad. But you're right. I mean, the weather did play a part of this. We're not making an excuse, but we're trying to tell it like it is. I think that there's going to be a lot of questions for this football team, as there always is, but I expect them to bounce back in a big way at home next week against a video game-like Chiefs offense and a peewee-like Chiefs defense. So there's some things to look at going forward as far as that goes.
Well, speaking of bad, I thought the Browns were badder than I thought they were going to be. They have a reconstituted team. They have 7 new players on offense, 5 new on defense. And, of course, Tyrod Taylor is not something to be worried about. But they did have some big names that have joined the team. But that didn't really show up.
Yeah, that's why this is even more miserable, because this Cleveland team sucks, and they might be good by the end of the year because they have so much talent. It will be hard for them not to be good. I mean, like you said with Tyrod Taylor, every other team is starting their rookie quarterback, right? Baker Mayfield is better than Tyrod Taylor. And if it were any other team, I would say the Cleveland Browns don't have any excuse to have Tyrod Taylor starting over Baker Mayfield. But given their history of ruining first-round quarterback picks, I kind of get where they're coming from, and they don't need to be in a rush. But if Tyrod plays the way he did against us the rest of the season, Baker will be in there. And this is so frustrating because for all the hype about Cleveland, this was the same crappy Cleveland team from last year. The only difference is they have maybe the best defensive player in the league now in a like potential realized Myles Garrett, who absolutely wrecked the game, forced two fumbles, had multiple tackles for a loss, and just generally destroyed the Steelers.
Well, let's move on to Ben. Let's move on to some specifics. He taking a look at last year, he was a little shaky starting out of the gate. He was even worse yesterday. And the question that I had is, who was the progenitor of those interceptions? Was it AB running a route that running the wrong route? Was it? I mean, clearly Ben was responsible for a couple of those picks, not all of them.
Yeah,
Jesse James handed one over. As a matter is. Point fact.
He literally handed it over. So the big thing of the game, everybody, we all know it, is the offense had six freaking turnovers. He threw the five picks against Jacksonville last year. And honestly, this was kind of similar, where it's like, here's a backhanded compliment. It actually wasn't the worst game I've ever seen him play. And that's only because we've seen him play some pretty bad ones. Granted, he is the greatest quarterback to ever play the game of football, and we are the Ben Roethlisberger podcast. But the interceptions were not all his fault. So the stat line did look a little bit worse. What did he have? Three interceptions and two fumbles, right? So I did take a look at all of those different at the turnovers. And if I pull it up right over here, I took a couple notes on them. So we're gonna kind of tell you why they happened. But at the end of the day, Ben was bad, man. I mean, he wasn't horrific, but he was bad. He was generally inaccurate. He missed a bunch of throws. Honestly, AB was beating his guy all day long. He missed them on the first third down of the game, the third play of the game. AB had a slant, and he could have taken that thing just as long as Juju Smith-Schuster took that 67-yard slant later, because Greg Williams, for the defensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns, fancies himself some sort of football Picasso with his blitzing schemes. And they caused havoc for us, but they also leave a lot of openings in the secondary. And Ben wasn't able to take advantage of those because he was just generally inaccurate. He also held the ball way too long. It's kind of that old school complaint of Ben that Todd Haley helped to fix a little bit. And this is where I have a problem with the feet master calling the plays. A lot of 5 and 7 step drops. Ben was holding it too long. Also, later in the game, Ben just wasn't clutch. We got the ball back with 1:58 left and he threw incompletions. We got the ball back in overtime and he wasn't able to get it done. But okay, so that's kind of the high-level look at Ben. Let's talk about the turnovers that he had. If you look at him, the first turnover was the worst one, in my opinion. That's where the Steelers were driving into the Cleveland Browns red zone, driving pretty easily on that defense, and Ben had AB and I think Switzer over to his right side, and they were running a little combination route. And this harkened back to the issues of Ben early last season. Ben locks in on AB. And sometimes if AB isn't open, he kind of shuffles around until AB gets sort of open. And that's what he tried to do here. And he threw it and didn't even see the cornerback, their first round pick. Who is it? Just total mind blank right here. The dude from Ohio State, Denzel Ward. Not to be confused with the actor, Denzel Washington. So anyways, that one was horrific. He just locked onto AB, didn't want to read the field, and threw it into a crowd of four people. That one was brutal.
I have nothing to say about that. I agree. And yeah, don't forget Denzel Ward, Denzel James Washington.
Denzel James. Whoa. If we could combine them, you'd have a pretty good guy. Anyways, well, now since we have to keep it real with you guys, so if Ben does something wrong, we got to tell you. But since we are the Ben Roethlisberger podcast, I'll follow this up by said he threw some beautiful spirals out there. And damn, was his touchdown pass to AB next level. When they hooked that for that touchdown pass on, what was it, second and goal from the 22-yard line, gorgeous throw to the outside shoulder. Denzel Washington Ward actually had excellent coverage on him. But AB is a 99 to Madden, so he made easy work of that guy. And that's pretty much why the Steelers are better than the Browns, roster-wise. Roster-wise, they're closer than you would think, but we got Ben and AB. And we rely on Ben to do a lot of great stuff, and he didn't do it. So that's why we lost.
It sounds like Cleveland might match up on paper, but they're not anywhere near us. And we've heard some things from hearsay about the coaching discipline or lack thereof, because it sounds like Haley's the – I keep hearing that Haley's the adult in the locker room there.
Oh, geez.
It sounds like the punishment is doled out by denying pizza to the offensive line if something isn't done.
I mean, he's two losses away from another DUI. Has he ever got one? He's due. I'll tell you that much. He got in a little incident at the Tequila Cowboy outside Heinz Field last night. Every team he goes to, there's some sort of drunken scandal that involves his wife getting into a bar fight. So I think that's all you need to say about Todd Haley. Okay, so that's the first turnover. And then we followed out with a positive, which was an absolutely gorgeous, sublime touchdown pass to the best receiver in the league from the best quarterback who's ever played. All right. Okay, guys, let's be honest. The best quarterback who ever played is Aaron Rodgers, who absolutely astounded on one leg last night. But besides him, it's Ben. Okay, interception number two was a gorgeous punt by Ben, where he just chucked it long to AB. He thought AB was going to run a skinny post. Well, AB ran a flat post, which means Antonio Brown, instead of angling his route towards the middle of the field goal post in the other end zone, you kind of flatten it out and aim towards the sideline. That was a miscommunication. That really comes down to both of them, right? Interception number three, he threw it to Jesse's hands. It went right in between his hands and right to the opposition. That's obviously 100% on Jesse James. It was a fine throw, hit him in the hands. Turnover number four was James Conner's fumble. We will get into that later because I have a few things to say about James Conner that you guys may not be happy about. Granted, he was freaking fantastic for most of the game. Turnover number five. This was a bunch of crap. This was the Myles Garrett force fumble. So this was a weird play. Marquise Pouncey, best center to ever play the game. What do you guys think about that besides Dermoni Dawson? And Mike Webster. All right, I got to stop doing that. Let's talk about the game, Nick. Reel it in. So Pouncey had a low snap, very crappy. Ben had to pick it up off of his shoelace. And basically it was like an RPO type situation. So instead of the offensive line just pass blocking, they got a little bit cute with it, I guess with the assumption that on those RPOs, Ben is either handing it or throwing it within like a second and a half. But the low snap made it take too much time. And so Alejandro Villanueva was tasked with the unenviable task of blocking Myles Garrett, which he did not have a lot of success with doing all game. But instead of blocking him on that play, he kind of blocked to the inside to simulate a run play. And David DeCastro, the right guard, pulled, and he was supposed to block Myles Garrett on that play. He did not get close. He didn't even get a finger on Myles Garrett. So after Pouncey snapped the ball low, Ben picked it up off the ground and stood up to the best defensive player in the entire league already in his face. And he made him fumble there. So that's kind of how you go through that one. And then the last turnover was the fumble later. And this was another example of where an offensive lineman, Gilbert, basically the defensive end basically ran around him untouched. Gilbert tagged him for a second, but it was a long developing route, but he just whiffed. That was a bad sack that he gave up, and he didn't give Ben enough time to get it downfield. So should Ben have gotten rid of the ball in those two fumbles a little bit earlier? Yeah, you'd like to see that. But honestly, it wasn't like he was just throwing the ball to the other team all game long.
Okay, good recap of the turnovers. Made me feel worse with each passing analysis. Let's go into coaching a little bit. I don't have any Mike Tomlinisms, but let's look at the feet master, the Jimmy Houston of football. I don't know if you know Jimmy Houston. I've just discovered him on the History Channel. He has a great hunting show. I've learned elk hunting, pheasant hunting. Jimmy Houston is Randy Feetner without the football.
Anyway. Is he like fit or is he just sort of?
No, No, he has good. Gorgeous blonde colored, he has dyed blonde bangs hanging over his eyes, but he's usually masked in camouflage, so you don't actually have to look at his face.
Well, it's hard to see those guys.
I think one of the themes of the game, which is something that has irritated me over the years, I wish there was a better way to express this, but the playing not to lose. How much time is left in the game? 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter,
almost
up by two touchdowns.
10.
And just in ball protection, it's like a basketball game where you're up by 10 and you're just trying to hold the ball. And we're running, it looked like Randy just pulled out the old playbook, started running the ball, and clearly Cleveland understood what was going to happen, and they stopped Connor at every move.
Yeah, that was my big problem with the Feetmaster this game. I said in my notes here that he gets a failing grade for his first game. And I still believe that because I think that you can have a great game and then you can make one or two big blunders that cost your team the game when you're supposed to seal it. And that's just below the line for me. He did call a good game most of the time. But then when you're only up by 14, it's a two-score game. There's about 10 minutes left in the game, and he's going to jumbo formations and clearly trying, he took his foot off the gas pedal. And to me, you need to make it a 3-score game. Obviously, anyone can come back at any point, but a 3-score game with that amount of time left, that's tough. You know, somebody could get a fluke turnover, even if it's 2-score game. And we saw that's literally what happened. So that was my biggest problem with him. He tried to run that's just such a dumb move. Whenever we see anybody doing that, you need a little bit more of a lead to make another team try and beat you that way. And he tried to run the ball out. And not only did that result in giving Cleveland extra drives, it just made our offense extra predictable. And he didn't set James Conner up to have a successful second half after such a dominant first half. And he didn't set the linemen up because he basically put in all these jumbo formations and told the Cleveland Browns, we're running it straight. We don't want to fumble. And that, to me, is kind of his undoing. So he called an okay game, but he got way too conservative at the end and left room for error. And that's one of the big reasons why we lost the game.
So let's moving on to receptions. We're going to mention James Conner, but I do want to say that James, the beef on James is he couldn't block and he couldn't catch. He had 5 receptions for 57 yards. Let's say that. Antonio Brown had a very quiet 93 yards. I mean, the touchdown, spectacular touchdown, but he did have 93 yards. I'm not sure anybody would realize that unless they were looking at the stats. Juju, 5 receptions, 119 yards.
Yeah, but the long is 67. That helps that a lot. But what the other ones were like 20 yards each. He had the long fade. He had another long crosser. Juju was awesome. You know what, AB, it did seem quiet at first. It was odd because usually he dominates in the first game of the season. You remember last year against the Browns? Remember that game against the Redskins? Even against the Patriots, he tore up Malcolm Butler after he was a Super Bowl hero. So it was weird, but man, AB's, you know, his off game is still 9 catches for 93 yards and a tutty, but Ben missed him all day.
He had 16 targets, 9 receptions.
Oh, man.
Definitely under the line.
There were especially that slant early, and then there was that fade route on third down or second down or something like that later in the game. Ben missed AB. No, Denzel Ward had a couple of nice plays where he did cover him, but, man, that's another reason why Ben's not going to get a good grade in our grading segment. So besides that, nobody else caught the ball. Justin Hunter had 1 catch. I'm not going to count that because of just thinking. They need to get Justin Hunter off the field. This is what we said in training camp, that we hope that we never have to see this guy in the field, and you saw the reason why. He's just nothing. I hope that the reason why James Washington isn't on the field yet is because of that abdomen injury, and hopefully he feels better. Obviously, he got a few snaps, but we need to get him up to speed. And we said in the preseason, the Martavis release, granted now he's going to be suspended for the year, so maybe it was okay, but you know, James Washington, you're not going to be able to expect him to be a beast from day one. It even took Juju a couple weeks. So we do need Washington because AB and Juju were great, but we need some contributions from the other wide receivers.
Well, just to mention that the gunslinger, Jesse James, did have 3 receptions for 60 yards.
And he had an interception that he threw. Yeah.
Nice. Let's move to Jimmy Connor. James Connor is the real deal.
He is.
He is, could be, and is a starting NFL running back.
We said it all preseason. Whenever we saw him run the ball last year, what was he averaging, like 7 yards a carry last year? We knew that was a small sample size. And maybe since he is literally the antithesis of Le'Veon Bell when it comes to running style, where Le'Veon is basically dancing the nutcracker out there, swishing and swooshing all around, James Conner just launches himself out of a rocket ship launcher at the defense and just speeds right through them.
Well,
and
so
maybe some of his success last year was due to that. Well, no. We saw that he dominated in training camp. We saw him dominate in the preseason. We saw him improve his catching, like you mentioned earlier. He had a nice one-handed catch in the preseason that particularly showed me, like, okay, this guy's comfortable catching the ball now. Had another one-handed catch. He dominated. He was amazing. He played fantastic. Listen, there is no replacing Le'Veon Bell, but man, he looks like he'll do even better than D'Angelo Williams did that one season. And honestly, we expected this. We saw that he was doing this in the preseason, and you know it's not an exact one-to-one prediction, but he did an awesome job, and he was able to catch the ball. He even was decent blocking, and he was great running the ball. Now, here's the part that nobody's going to want to hear. James Conner lost the game for the Steelers. I know that sounds crazy with how bad Ben played, with some of the very ill-timed mistakes that the offensive line made, with the feet master calling seven-step drops when Ben was having no time. Everybody played a loss in this. And football is the ultimate team game, so you really don't know. It's like, hey, what if somebody made a play earlier in the game? That has just as much of effect as, let's say, James Conner's fumble in the fourth quarter, which is more visible as, you know? But I got to say this. Man, that fumble was easily the biggest play in the game because it gave a touchdown directly to the Browns. The Browns only had two drives the entire game that were legitimate, where they went and they scored touchdowns. Tyrod Taylor was 15 for 40. So with the Steelers there, they didn't even make Tyrod Taylor have to go make a drive there. You gave them the points. And with the time that was left in the game, when did he fumble? It was like 8 minutes left. They're still up by 14. You give them a free touchdown. Part of a running back's job is to carry the team throughout the game, and then it's to close out the game. Ball security is paramount. If he hadn't done that, I think it's 99% that the Steelers would have won the game.
So let's move on to the offensive line. It looked like they were opening up big holes for Conner in the first half. I mean, he did some of this on his own, but the offensive line had good push, opening things up. But it looked like they got tired over the course of the game because the second half, Conner was not breaking off anything big.
Yeah, I mean, like you said earlier in the analysis, the first half, it was sloppy, but the Steelers were in control. I guess they went up 7-0 and then shortly went up. And then I guess Tyrod Taylor scored early in the second half, and then the Steelers kind of took control of it later. But they did seem to lose a little steam, but I think that's a little bit more because the feet master got conservative and he just started calling obvious run plays and he just refused to come up with some creative short quick hitters for Ben and kept calling those long 7-step drops and 5-step drops. And I feel like, yeah, they could have done a better job and those two turnovers were pretty nasty with those linemen missing those blocks. But honestly, the feet master wasn't putting them in a good position, and it's kind of unacceptable that, you know, we have the same type of fumble happen to the quarterback multiple times. It's like, dude, you gotta adjust a little bit. And so I do feel like they did well, and you're absolutely right. They were parting the Red Sea in the first half for James Conner. Dominant run blocking.
So let's move on to the defense, where I spent most of my time. It's interesting that there was a tale of two halves. In the first half, Cleveland was rushing for 3.7 yards per carry. Second half was 6.6.
Huh.
The only good thing that Tyrod Taylor did was to run the ball. He was the leading rusher for Cleveland with 77 yards. Carlos Hyde was next with 62. In the second half, this is where the Browns were tearing off big plays on the ground. They had 7 runs of over 10 yards. Tyrod Taylor accounted for no fewer than 4 of those. He had runs of 20, 24, 17, 4 touchdowns, and 11 yards. So that's where I thought the defense, even though the time of possession was basically even, they looked like they were just on the field too long and having to trying to contain, where they had contained the Browns all game. The rushing game sort of emerged in the second half. The other thing I noticed was the average start for the Pittsburgh Steelers on offense was the 23-yard line. Cleveland's average start was at the 32. Granted, there were the fumble on the 1 yard line definitely helped that average, but there were three series in the fourth quarter that started in Steeler territory. Some of this attributable to the Aussie.
To the Aussie? Oh, the Aussie.
John Berry.
I was thinking Black Sabbath. We're talking AC/DC on that one. AC/DC.
I do not like to get rid of players I like, but Jordan Berry is his job's not safe. Yeah.
No, he had that punter competition with Wiley or whatever, who now plays for Minnesota. He had that competition within the summer, and we have seen the Steelers switch punters and kickers during the season before, and he was miserable. And you see how crucial special teams are. We'll get into more detail about that later, but to address what you were saying about the Cleveland Browns kind of running all over us in the second half, it was sort of a short-lived thing. I don't know why, but I do believe Aditi Kinkabwala said that Cam Hayward was out for that drive when they had one of the two drives I was referring to in which they actually went down the field. One of those drives was seven straight run plays that ended in that 17-yard Tyrod Taylor scramble. And Cam was out on that drive, apparently. And then he came back in, and they weren't really able to replicate that success. So that kind of tells you a lot about the depth we have, right? And obviously,
well, maybe he was tired from making every tackle.
It could be tiring. I'd imagine that would be tiring. I don't know. But I've never done it before. But
I actually thought, you know, between Alu and even Danny McCullers was out there, I thought the front line was stout and did their job.
Yeah. They were solid. I thought that obviously Hayward picked up where he left off last year, and I really liked what Tua did. He was getting pushed. The defensive linemen were good, and that's what we expect out of them.
We'll give a little bit more detail when we go through the grades. Why don't we move on to another bright spot, TJ Watt?
Yeah, so we took a while to get into him here. He had a monster stat line. It's kind of his annual tradition, right, Nat? Right? To just rack up stats in the first game against the Browns. Last year he had, I believe, two sacks and an interception. And this year, he single-handedly made sure that we did not lose to the Browns by blocking that field goal at the end, which, by the way, was beastly. I mean, that wasn't a lucky thing. He just summoned the will of Christ and just burst through that line like it was the last thing he would ever do in his life. And he swatted that thing down. Swatted it like Andre Iguodala swatted LeBron James in the finals. Eat that, Cleveland. How you like that? Remember when you lost those finals? I like that. Oh, yeah. TJ Watt got
you. Do you want to do your breathing? Do your breathing.
Nah, it feels good.
Okay. TJ Watt, some incredible statistics. He had 11. Let's say Vince Williams had the most tackles with 12. TJ Watt followed with 11.
Jeez.
Four sacks, 5.5 tackles for loss, and he hit Tyrod Taylor four separate times. By the way, I watched every one of those plays on defense when he wasn't marking one of those stats. I mean, TJ Watt's motor never stops. Yeah. I've got to talk about Bud a little bit here, because Bud still does the question mark rush. He just goes far enough to the rear of the quarterback not to even get into the play. He has more moves than that. I did notice that.
I don't know about that.
He does try to go inside, but he was absolutely swallowed by the DN. He was swallowed. He looked like a little, as athletic as he is, he was just getting stopped. And when he didn't go up top, he was just stopped in front of a very large, 375-pound, 6'6" man. What was interesting about him in the fourth quarter, at 3rd and 10, he had a shot on Tyrod Taylor. He ran unblocked at him, and and Tyrod got around him for 24 yards and got them a first down. Two plays later, same situation, and you know this was in Bud's head. He got up to Tyrod. He stutter-stepped because he knew Tyrod was going to go wide, and he slowed down before he reached Taylor, and Tyler ran around the edge again. So I don't know. With all that athleticism I keep hearing about, he's not doing the job.
Yeah, so those are just the plays we expect him to make. We told you guys before, don't expect a breakout from Bud Dupree. By the way, that 6'5" offensive lineman you were talking about was an undrafted rookie free agent who is starting for the first time ever. So
no, that, first round no, pick. He definitely was. He was definitely on Bud. He also was, there were times he was just on the offense on the tackle. Sorry for the stuttering.
Right.
So I watched him in a variety.
The tackle is undrafted rookie.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the tight end. Never mind.
No, I forgot what the tackle's name is, but he's a guy who's never played in the NFL, wasn't even drafted, and never started a game. Yeah, it makes it much worse. But with those things with Bud, we told you before, don't expect him to become a great pass rusher. I mean, at best case scenario, you can hope that he's going to be an average player who occasionally makes some great hustle plays, and they can scheme him into making sacks. But he's not a real first, and that's the difference between him and T.J. Watt. They're both cut from the same cloth. They're super athletic. They got crazy motors. And part of the reason why Pittsburgh picked them is because apparently we like to put our defensive or our outside linebackers who are really, you know, our edge rushers, we like to put them in coverage a lot, over 30% of the time. And those guys are fast enough to do that. But with Bud, it's like, listen, man, I don't expect you to go in there and beat your guy all the time. But at least when you're going one-on-one with the quarterback, which is tough because Tyrod's a good scrambler and he's very fast. But it's like, man, at least do that. You got your athleticism. So he was a little bit below the line. But going back to T.J. Watt, his stat line was insane. And he did play really well. It was a little bit inflated, kind of like it was before. Like two of the sacks were actually quarterback runs where he kind of stopped him a couple inches behind the line of scrimmage. And then he beat a tight end. They tried to put Darren Fells, I believe, is the tight end. If I'm wrong, people are going to be screaming at me. But the tight end trying to block T.J. Watt, and he made mincemeat out of him and crushed Tyrod Taylor. You can say, hey, that's a tight end blocking him, but I would respond by saying, good, he should eat him up, and that's what the first-round pick did. And then T.J.'s best play besides the field goal block to me was when they tried to double-team him with, like, the back and the tackle, and they kind of stonewalled him at first, but he powered through that contact and got through both of those guys to sack Tyrod Taylor. And that – to me, is progression from last year because he wasn't that physical last year, and that was a dominant play and really encouraging for T.J. Watt, along with James Conner, a really big bright spot for the team.
So in light of Tyrod Taylor's Taylor's absolute futility, the Steelers' defensive secondary were actually on a strategic planning retreat because they really didn't need to be out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. We haven't really talked about the defense at a high level this game because honestly, there wasn't that much to talk about. They did play well, but man, this was a repeat of last year when the Steelers opened the season against a bunch of horrific quarterbacks. DeShone Kizer, Case Keenum in his first start for the Vikings. Glennon, Bortles, all kinds of guys where the Steelers worked their way up to this high ranking before getting, you know, put back down to earth by Matt Stafford and Tom Brady. So the secondary, they did some good things, though. As far as the corners go, they won some battles and they lost some. But they won more than they've won in past years. I thought that a couple guys made nice plays with the ball in the air, which is something that I wasn't even aware Steelers defensive backs were even allowed to do within the context of the Butler scheme. I thought that the plan was just let them score. Let's get the offense back on the field. Let's sell some damn tickets. We need butts in seats. The more time AB is out there, the more jerseys we sell.
Let them score.
But apparently the DBs didn't get the message because Hayden had a gorgeous pass breakup on Josh Gordon in the end zone. Sean Davis had that beautiful pass breakup on Njoku on third on a very crucial third down late in the fourth quarter. Might have been overtime. It was very late in the game. And then I had another one in there, right? Cameron Sutton got that little interception. And Terrell Edmonds on a third down. I don't know if it was Njoku or somebody else made a catch, and he kind of knocked it out of his hands on third down. So that's a very – that's what we're looking for. Again, we expected that out of training camp to see some guys make some more plays on the ball. By the way, a quick little note, Joe Hayden did go out with a hamstring. I saw on Twitter today that it's just a minor pull, so that's good news for us, but he's not confirmed to play next week. We'll definitely want him back because he looked pretty good.
Well, so they did get dinged for a couple of times. So in the second quarter with about 10 minutes to go, Jarvis Landry had a catch. Joe Hayden got completely turned around on this thing. It seemed like the ball must have been hung up there, and it was a fly ball. I have no idea what Joe did or what he saw from that standpoint, but Jarvis Landry did catch him. And let me also say, then Cam Sutton giveth, but Cam Sutton taketh away. He got burned twice in a row in overtime by Jarvis Landry. There was the 38-yard reception, followed right away by the 17-yard touchdown reception.
Okay, wait. Those weren't Jarvis Landry. That first one was 81. I forgot who that was. And the second one was Josh Gordon for the touchdown, who made – and honestly, I thought that the first one they kind of got him, but the touchdown to Josh Gordon, he was all over him. Josh Gordon just made an insane catch.
Tom Serena knocks that down 8 out of 10 times. But I will say it might not have been total redemption, but with 18 seconds left in the fourth quarter and Cleveland threatening – Cam did manage an interception. It was nice. And with 4:41 exactly in overtime, 3rd and 11, there was a pass to Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson was rumbling towards the first down, and Cam shut that down. So I don't put any of this on Cam's shoulders, but there was a little unevenness to the game.
There was much better tackling from the corners. Silver Bullet, Mike Hilton, made an appearance on a very nice tackle. By the way, it was nice to see the Silver Bullet in the game. It was a little quiet for him, but he was injured in the preseason. Glad to see him out there. Yeah, him and Sutton had nice open field tackles. So there's definite improvements from the Steelers secondary, especially from the corner position, because we have no idea what the safeties were doing, because Tyrod Taylor actually can't physically throw the ball over 6 yards. And the funny thing about that long 33-yard catch that Jarvis Landry had on Joe Hayden, I think that was actually something the Browns should try and do more of, is just take advantage of how bad Tyrod Taylor is, because that ball was not a back-shoulder throw. It was just so horrifically underthrown. I think Jarvis Landry, having practiced with Tyrod Taylor, is used to just the gunshot style of passing that he had. It could go anywhere. And the Steelers' defensive backs, they usually play against NFL quarterbacks, and they play against Ben. They think, like, oh, it's either going to be ahead of him. Oh, it's going to be a back shoulder. Oh, it's going to be a jump ball. Nope, it's on the total opposite side of the field. So I feel like they sort of took advantage of that. And then luckily it worked in our favor when Cam Sutton had that interception when Tyrod Taylor threw it right to him. But he did catch it, which is an improvement.
So speaking of tackling, I watched for this. I thought the Steelers did a fine job of tackling. There were a couple of plays you could point to where they're missed tackling. That wasn't a problem this time. Let's talk about the inside linebackers.
Yeah, I thought that they were I thought they were up and down, but they definitely made more positive plays than they made in the preseason. I thought they had some decent run stops. They definitely missed some tackles in the hole that you wish that they would have, particularly on that drive where we got thrashed and gashed 7 times in a row on their way to an embarrassing Cleveland Browns touchdown. But one thing that they did pretty cool was I thought that they strung the play out really well, which is to say, when the running back gets the handoff and tries to bounce it to the outside and tries to run kind of towards the sideline and just run around everybody like they think they're Fast Willie Parker or something. Even Vince Williams chased them down a couple times. Bostic did, and they cut off the angle for no gain or 1 yard. And that's something that obviously Ryan Shazier is unbelievable at, that I thought we would never see again. Sean Spence, the poor bastard who ruined our season last year, horrific at that. So it was nice to see the Steelers do a better job.
So moving on to special teams, I think we have some good news to report there. Ryan Switzer. Ryan Switzer actually looks like a guy who was trained to do this job, kick and punt returning.
Yeah, for an actual one instead of like, Eli, I don't know. Somebody
should be back there. How about you? No,
I would
you.
Love to. Oh, right. That, you understood, of course. Ryan Switzer was awesome. Another big bright spot. If you put MVPs for this game, you got to say James Conner. I take that back. He was until he threw the game away. TJ Watt, Ryan Switzer, two whiteys on the MVP board. When's the last time you saw that? I don't think you'll ever see it again for the Steelers, but pretty good job from Switzer. He was shaking and baking all day, made a huge difference in field position, which the Australian Jordan Berry pretty much would negate with his just pile of crap that he sent out there on the field. But I digress. He was awesome. Barry was very bad. And Boz, man, that was the worst. You know, Boz, not his best showing. All of his extra points were barely inside the crossbar. And then, of course, listen, Boz missed the game-winning field goal in the fourth quarter. And I didn't even think that was a sentence that we would ever say. So it sucks. It was a 48-yard kick in pouring rain. The ball's – that's not a super high percentage kick. But listen, This is the boss man. Making low percentage kicks in the rain to win games, that's what he does. That's his middle name. Chris making kicks in inclement weather to win games, Boswell. That's his God-given name, and he did not live up to it, or his giant contract that he just signed. So I feel like the timing was off for Bozzy. And he
That's
didn't
unfortunate.
That.
The other good news is Dirty Red is back into his natural position. No pressure to perform and drop back in coverage or cover some holes and go laterally. He's just there covering punts and kickoffs, and he did a yeoman's job. He came up more times than not, three tackles on his own on kickoff and punt coverage.
He's a stud. He should be the AFC Special Teams Pro Bowler this year if he keeps it up. He actually even had a fourth tackle where the other guys, the Cleveland Browns, committed a penalty. The Steelers accepted it so they could re-kick, and all he did was go down there and make the tackle two plays in a row. He was awesome. It's beautiful to see a man work, and it would be kind of a cool story to see if he could work his way to a Pro Bowl, which to kind of make it feel better that, like, hey, we can't have you out there on defense. You understand, right, buddy? Like, you're good, but, you know, not
we have this guy.
Yeah, we have some other guys.
So happy to be back into a season where we can get into a rhythm on these podcasts. And as we did last year, we're going to offer the positional grades. We're going to go through more rapidly than we have in the past. I think we've done a pretty good job of extrapolating, if that's probably not the right word, of explaining ourselves. So we're going to go through position by position with our grades. And we're going to ask you to give us some feedback to see whether you agree or not. So, 2, 1.
Offensive grades.
Offensive grades.
So let's start with the quarterback. Nicholas, what's your rating for Ben?
Well, we used to have a sound drop for that, but Benny.
We do have a sound
drop.
Oh my
gosh. I feel like I might consider getting an intern for us, unpaid, obviously. But if I ever have to say anything bad about Ben, because sometimes if he doesn't play well, like, listen, we want to tell you like it is. So we're going to. But I don't like talking bad about him, even if he does bad. So I'm making an intern in here. Maybe my girlfriend will be the intern, and she can, you know, give you the bad news. But since I haven't hired one yet, I got to give Ben a D+. Man, this team is structured around the concept that Ben is going to make big throws. He definitely had some good plays. I mean, his touchdown to AB was great, and he moved the ball. He ended up getting over 300 yards passing, and it wasn't all garbage time stuff. He accumulated that yardage. Obviously, the big throw to Juju helped, but he definitely did some good things. But, man, he was just generally inaccurate. He missed, man, probably 6 or 7 throws that should have been completions. Obviously, the interceptions, not all of them were his fault, but when you have 3 picks and 2 fumbles – there's something you're not doing right there. I will say, a positive of the game, he did force a fumble. When James Conner fumbled it, Jabril Peppers returned it to the 1-yard line, and Ben, perfect, head on helmet. That makes no sense. Head inside of helmet, connecting with ball. Punched that out of Jabril Peppers, and it actually bounced out of the back of the end zone, so we thought it was going to be a touchback, but it turns out his foot was touching out of bounds, and then he touched the ball, so it's like a weird technicality, so it was out of bounds. But Ben did force a fumble. Sorry.
I'm going to move that from a D+ to a C-, because don't forget, Ben also had a 15-yard run, and we did a quarterback sneak for the first time in 12 years.
Yeah, it was beautiful with that.
During which you got a first down. Let's move to running back. You have rated James Conner a C+.
C+.
I think you are downgrading him for it was a horrific play, but it was only one play. I think you're being hard on him.
I think that one play is enormous in football. That one play is the difference between everything. I mean, if AB doesn't make that unbelievable catch, we lose the game. I mean, I know that football, you have to look at football in a smarter way than that, because any one play could be that play. What if, you know, Justin Hunter didn't short arm a fade pass that Ben threw to him earlier in the game? He could have scored. You could say this is Justin Hunter's fault. But honestly, there are moments in football games where you can win and lose games, and fumbling the ball in the fourth quarter when you're protecting a lead is already a cardinal sin for a running back. But fumbling the ball in that situation and in that way, where you literally gave the Browns a touchdown, that is an enormous mistake. And I do think that it downgrades him from an A-plus to a C-plus.
So there were 224 plays in the game. I can't bring him down two full grades because of one play. It was critical, but it was also the responsibility of other people not to put us in that position. So B-plus. Let's move on. We just disagree on
that.
Wait,
hold on. I'll settle for a B, but he's not going to B-plus with a mistake like that.
Sold. Moving on to wide receivers.
Well, sorry, we got Juju. We got
Juju. Five receptions, 119 yards. Antonio Brown, nine receptions for 93 yards. And the gunslinger, three receptions for 60.
Yeah, so they are as advertised. And hopefully this year, I mean, it's nice to see he has Juju from the start, Benny, that is. Last year, I think a lot of the early season offensive woes were due to Ben trying to work Martavis back into the offense and Martavis just not being able to do it. We might be going through some of that with this little merry-go-round with James Washington and Justin Hunter, but it's nice to see two guys are already off to a huge start. There were a lot more big gains for those two guys to have, particularly AB, and Ben missed them. So I'm going to give them an A.
Moving on to tight end, I just did mention that the gunslinger had three receptions for 30 yards, but otherwise sort of invisible in this game.
Yeah, it's kind of the gunslinger, the outlaw, Jesse James. That's the way he does it. And, you know, if you're a tight end and you throw an interception, you're getting a C-.
Offensive line, great blocking in the first half. James Conner taking full advantage of that. Second half, not so much. They also gave access to the quarterback, although it's a question about whether it was the offensive line play or where Ben was holding the line too long.
Yeah, and like I said before, you know, the more I rewatched the game, the more I realized that the feet master kind of put them in some compromising situations. Listen, Myles Garrett legitimately might be a top five player in the NFL by the time this season's over. I mean, look what he did during the preseason, and he basically won that game for them. I mean, a tie for the Browns is a win, let's be real here. He was unbelievable. You can't just have Villanueva matched up with him one-on-one all game. Be realistic, right? So I think Fietner had some issues too. I downgraded them from my initial grade because I just think that they had those two massive blunders on those Ben Force fumbles, which are really more the fault of the offensive line. If you rewatch them, it's two defensive ends coming in untouched to get Ben. That's unacceptable. So I gave them a C+, but you know what? Bearing in mind what you said about James Conner, where you got to consider the whole body of work, I'll give him a B.
Moving on to the captain, as it were, the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, similar thing for him. I think he had good play calling until the fourth quarter, but, man, he's supposed to be a kind of, you know, answer to Todd Haley. And where Todd Haley just sometimes loses his mind and gets cute in play calling scenarios, the Feedmaster kind of folded, and his inability to stay aggressive and not realize the damn score, time, and situation of the game was super disappointing. And his inability to adjust the passing strategy were his downfall. I just think that he sent Ben on far too many long developing pass plays, which exposed him to that Cleveland Browns rush with their weird exotic blitz schemes. So we're going to give him a C-. But be comfortable with the fact that I do think that he's the man for the job and he'll improve going forward.
Agreed. Defensive line. Cam Hayward was just a machine, and he was the Terminator during this game. And I would have given – I also could have given him the player of the game for at least on the defensive side. He, Intuit, I saw Alualu. I think the defensive line did an incredible job. There was huge push. They were pushing guys back towards the quarterback and causing interference in the backfield.
Is that Tomlin?
That's Tomlin.
Tell him no. We're actually not even grading him today, so he doesn't have to worry about it.
I'm just going to take the battery out of this phone. You please go ahead with your analysis of the D-line.
You would think that he'd be watching film right now, but he knows the real guys that he has to go to.
Hence a tie with the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's hard at work. Yeah, that defensive line was great. They got to stay great, and you really got to hope that Hayward and Tuitt stay healthy because you did see them get annihilated when he was out there. That I mean, it's happened 2 years in a row, whether it's Tuitt or Hayward or whatever, you know, let's hope that those backup guys and McCullers keep improving and everything like that. But they definitely get an A for this performance.
The inside linebackers, I think we said they were sort of up and down, Bostic and Vince Williams, but they did account for, sorry, back in there, most of the tackles. We give them a B.
Yeah, fair.
Outside linebackers, this is where you and I have a little bit of a disagreement because we've got to average two guys. One guy who's playing way above the line and one guy who's playing way not up to his potential.
Yeah, I mean, TJ Watt, we've all pegged it. You know, every year when you look at a team, maybe the main player you're looking at outside of the stars and the quarterback, hopefully those coincide with each other, right? Hopefully you got a star quarterback. Luckily, we have the greatest gunslinger to ever lace up the cleats. Let's grade the quarterback again. A plus. Okay, I'm just kidding. The guy that you look at the most is your first round pick from the year before. You give TJ Watt a pass in his rookie season where he did pretty well. So you expect him to take a big step up. And this first game, if it's any indication, he's taken that step up. He was awesome. He would get probably an A plus if it were just him out there. But it's not just him out there.
It's the Butterick. And the Butterick is serviceable at best. But like I said, he got swallowed up. He still takes a long time to get to the quarterback, which gives the quarterback a long time to throw the ball. And he makes plays. It's fine. Like I said, he's serviceable, but way below the line for a first-round pick.
Yeah, well, guess what? TJ Watt saved us from officially losing to the Browns, even though we lost to them by tying them. So we're giving them a grade of A minus.
A minus.
So we looked at the safeties, and we're giving them a grade of incomplete. I think Sean Davis did have several tackles, but Tyrod couldn't get the ball 6 yards past the line of scrimmage. It was really difficult to see them getting involved.
I'm actually going to go ahead and give him an incomplete plus because I really loved that pass breakup on third down from Sean Davis where he came over and almost intercepted it. Maybe should have intercepted it. I think it was a little bit out of his range. Would have been a crazy pick, but that was cool, man, because we don't know if he can play free safety. They keep moving the poor guy around. He hasn't really succeeded at any of the positions yet. Now he's playing this one. But athletically speaking, we do think that Sean Davis has the range to play that free safety spot. He's going to get tested next week against the most bombs-away offense we've seen in a long time, probably since the Ben and the non-suspended Martavis Bryant, when Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and those boys come to town. So we'll give them a real grade next week, but for this week, they get an incomplete plus.
Nice. So going to the quarterbacks is sort of in the same category, although they did get
Cornerbacks.
Cornerback. I was trying to enunciate. So the cornerbacks did an okay job. I think you're going to grade them a little higher than I did. I think they got exposed on a couple of plays, especially the Joe Hayden and the Cam Sutton foibles.
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, it's so hard to grade them because Tyrod Taylor is so bad. And even the foible by Joe Hayden, I really think was just the product of Joe Hayden or Tyrod Taylor being so bad that Hayden just could have never predicted where that ball was going. But hey, you're going to get beat sometimes. But I think that they made more pass breakups than they had long balls caught on them. And then the Josh Gordon touchdown, I forgive that, man. That was an insane – that was just a dominant job by him, similar to what A.B. did to Denzel Washington Ward in the corner of the end zone. So I'm going to give them a B.
Kicker, we're talking about Boswell. That I have to give him – I won't give him a pass for it. I mean, that's something that the $5 million man should be able to make, but – it was pouring. I think the snap was reportedly a little low. Didn't look like it to me, but we're going to grade him a C-.
And then we talk about barely squeaking. He was barely squeaking in those extra points too. I mean,
yeah, a little nerve wracking
over and over again. Yeah, it was a little bit of an off game for the boss man. He'll come back from it.
All right, and then the man down under.
He might be the man down under at the unemployment line if he keeps playing like this, because he got a D. He was total crap.
All right, hey, so as Nick mentioned at the beginning, this should have been a sloppy win. Where Cam Hayward and the Steeler Outpost podcast are counting it as a loss. There were a lot of things to work on, but a lot of positives we could take away from this, and hopefully without the downpour, although there's a tornado or hurricane coming our way, so hopefully it doesn't reach all the way to Pittsburgh.
Is that Hurricane Pat game. Mahomes?
Yeah, perhaps.
Or Josephine or something. Oh, Lawrence.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Lawrence. Yeah. Lawrence.
Well, hopefully it doesn't. And for any of our listeners who are out there, man, if they're giving you an evacuation warning, just go. I mean, I've lived in New Orleans and in Houston, and I was luckily out of town last year when Harvey hit. But, you know, reports about those things were that it was – we didn't expect Harvey was going to come, right? And it was kind of the day before, you know, within a couple of days that they announced that that thing was going to be really serious. So just don't take any chances. Get out of there if you got to get out of there. And as far as the Chiefs go, there's no getting out of there because a hurricane's coming at you, and it's named 84-7 because Ben and AB are about to put up 600 yards on you boys next week. The sky is not falling, you guys. I do think that the starters don't play together in the preseason. Ben is a chemistry quarterback, and he needs some time to work up that chemistry. He's bad on the road. We hope that stops happening, but there's no real excuse for why they played crappy. But, man, the weather and the first game, it's always a weird week. Those definitely played a factor. I think they're going to have a great bounce back, and they're going to need to because you can't go to 0-2 or 0-1-1 in the AFC right away. So I think Tomlin will have them up for this one.
This show has gone to its longest duration in 55 episodes. We've hit an hour. So we expect to double the audience because of this extra content we're delivering to you. But seriously, we appreciate you listening. We do this each week for you guys. Actually, we do it for ourselves too. Believe me, we're selfish. If you haven't subscribed, please do it. Tell a friend. Yeah. So we keep trying to make this show as informative and entertaining as possible. Please give us your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Leave us a note on the website, SteelersOutpost.com, or shoot us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Until next week, thanks for listening. Go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.